Hello, everybody. I'm Counterpart Glass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me today. It's June 18th, 2013, almost summer. Really looking forward to summer. It feels like summer right now. Bit hot, humid, and it's all good. So I wanted to bring up a few items that I'm really excited about in the news. Sort of good, sort of not so good, but it's important that at least the conversation is out there. So the first thing I wanted to bring up, you know, we're all a big fan of McDonald's, right? Well, McDonald's there in the news is about what's going on in Bolivia. They've been trying to get a foothold in Bolivia now for 13 years, and the Bolivians have basically said, forget about it. They're more interested in natural foods and not fast foods, and they just didn't get sold on it, and McDonald's is out of Bolivia. That's really exciting. There's always been some really fascinating things going on in Bolivia. I can't say I'm an expert about the country, but they're definitely a nation that stand up when it's time to. You may remember what happened with their water when the country privatized it and water became so expensive and people were out in the streets. They couldn't even collect rainwater, and they ended up throwing out that contract because it didn't work out as it was supposed to. Okay, and the other thing in the news, I want to direct you, if you have a chance, to read an article at MotherJones.com. Mother Jones is a really great magazine, if you don't know about it, and they've got an article called Gagged by Big Ag, and I'm in the middle of reading it right now, but so much great information in there, a whole history of what's been going on with our government and Big Ag, and how, you know, whatever happened to free speech and whistleblowers? Well, what's happening now with whistleblowers who are bringing out the horrific things that are going on in factory farms is they're being arrested and put in jail. And there are laws that support it. So this is something we all need to get educated about and do more about it. So I'll give you some time to read the article, and then we'll talk about it soon. How about that?
Great.
All right, so now let's bring on the first guest for the show today, and I think it ties in kind of nicely to what I was just talking about, and you'll see why. So Aaron Meager is the developer of Calapo, extra virgin coconut oil, a product manufactured and marketed by Beneficial Blends, headquartered in Tampa, Florida. Prior to creating Calapo, Aaron was a high school business teacher with a passion for motivating students to pursue entrepreneurship. While still teaching, she discovered extra virgin coconut oil. She launched Calapo in 2009 with the goal of producing the very best quality coconut oil on the market while ensuring fair and ethical treatment of the farmers who cultivate it. She insists the farmers be protected under the IMP Fair Trade Program, that they are organic certified, and that the company engage in eco-friendly practices. Welcome to It's All About Food, Erin.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me today.
You're very welcome. So if you were just listening, I really wanted to talk about the fair trade movement and finding a certain amount of responsibility with making products, because certainly McDonald's has been very responsible with its products, what it puts into its food, where it gets it from, and now what's going on with factory farming and the laws that support really horrific treatment, not only of animals, but the people that are employed at these companies. So let's talk a little bit first about you and how you became an entrepreneur, and then we'll get more into the meat, the coconut meat of the conversation.
Great. Yeah, well, like you mentioned in your introduction, I used to be a high school business teacher. It was my first job out of college, and part of my classes were teaching entrepreneurship, accounting, computer classes to mostly juniors and seniors. And it was wonderful. Teaching is an extremely hard job. If you've ever done it or know anyone who does, they put in so much time and effort into teaching, and it not a lot of rewards or recognition back for what they do. And so I was teaching.
I think that's really important that you said that, and I agree with you. Teachers do not get the credit they deserve.
Not at all. And to hear people even trying to say, is it even a profession? That's a whole nother radio interview.
So I was working along
and I was very enthusiastic about teaching these students, you know, go out there, start something, you know, you could be in business for yourself. You can go to school and start something on the side, or I was just very passionate about it. And they kind of looked at me and they were often asking me why I wasn't out there, you know, doing something. And I think at that time, the answer to that was, I just didn't know what I wanted to do yet. I'd always come back to these two things, education and business. And it wasn't until I found coconut oil myself, because I like to lead a very healthy, active lifestyle. And someone told me coconut oil was really healthy for you. So it's like, okay, I'll give it a try. And then I was convinced of its health benefits. By the local paper in Tampa Bay did an article on a woman's husband who had Alzheimer's, and she was a doctor, and so she started researching ways to help him. And one of the things that she found was your brain uses coconut oil as an energy source.
Mm-hmm.
And so it started helping his, you know, symptoms to alleviate those some. And I was like, wow, can a food that we're eating actually have that much direct correlation to our health? And that's what got me hooked. And I started doing lots more research on coconut oil and seeing how it's good for your immune system, your digestive system, your metabolism. And from that point on, I really devoted myself to spreading the message about coconut oil and making sure that there was a really high quality coconut oil on the market.
Okay, and that's the part that I really want to get to, how you started your business, how you found the coconuts, and and all about fair trade, because I think that's something we all need to know more about, and if people are thinking about starting businesses, this is definitely one way to go, making sure, well, why don't you tell me what fair trade is about, and rather than me doing all the talking.
I'm in the natural foods industry, and we're all very conscious now about gluten-free, trans fat-free, vegan, all of non-GMO, all those really hot-button issues, and we're all talking about how good and healthy our products are for you and all of that. But we can't forget, just because we're in the natural food industry and think, oh, we're doing so good for people because we're providing a natural product, is where are those products coming from, and how are we sourcing these products? So, unfortunately, we cannot grow coconut oil plantations in the U.S. We get too cold. So you have to go outside of the country to source coconut oil. And it's a completely sustainable process. The oil comes from the meat, the fleshy part of the coconut oil, which is pressed to produce the oil. And coconut palms produce all year long, so you're not cutting down a tree. You're just harvesting the fruit of the tree, and the tree continues to grow and reproduce. So it's great sustainability. But then you also need to look into quality and then the practices, the fair trade practices, which is really important. We like to contribute to communities which we do business, and we're doing business in Sri Lanka or the Philippines. We want to make sure that those are really good working conditions for those workers. I can't go over there and see myself, otherwise I would, but I need to trust somebody else to do that regulating or policing for me, and that's what I and feel comfortable with by sourcing fair trade certified products.
Okay. Have you ever been to those countries?
I have not yet.
Okay. Maybe you're going to want to do that sometime.
Oh, I definitely want to. Starting the business is really hard. Getting something from the ground up. So I have a lot of contact with my suppliers. They luckily come to the U.S. So I meet with them several times a year. We're in communications through emails and things like that. So we're always talking about what's going on. And eventually I'll get there and get to see it for myself. But I am lucky enough that they come over to the U.S. so that I can have and build those personal relationships, because I wouldn't want to do business with someone that I, you know, don't know who they are. I can't put a face with a name.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. In our situation, we have that.
Very good. Okay. Well, I just have to say a few things about my own personal experience with coconut oil. And mm-hmm. I know that there are a lot of people that are really passionate about the health benefits. And I'm kind of on the line about that. I'm not sure if coconut oil is healthy or not healthy. And those that believe in it and want to use it, you know, that's a great thing. I'm personally, I don't use a lot of oil in my diet, but if I'm having something rich, for example, coconut oil is great. It is a great substitute for butter, which I'm a vegan and I don't like to use animal products. So coconut oil really has come in handy as a great substitute because it's so rich. But what I love coconut oil for is not mm-hmm. for inside my body, but outside my body. I put it on my skin. I put it on my hair. I use it as a makeup remover. I love it. If I could bathe in it, I would.
You can. Just put a little bit in your bath. I've done that before.
Oh, there you go. But I always like to point out that it's not just what we put in our body. More and more people are becoming used to reading the fine print on food labels, but we also need to be reading the fine print on our personal care products. And there's so much junk in personal care products, and there's nothing better than pure organic coconut oil.
Especially because this is a food-grade coconut oil. You can have different grades of coconut oil. And since it's such a high-quality food grade and you can ingest it, that makes it even better for your hair care and skin care applications. Last night, I put it on as a moisturizer on my face, and I'm always using it for different things. If I get a nick or cut, I'll apply coconut oil to that as well, or it's good for after sun skin care for moisturizing mm-hmm. and pain relief.
What I love about it is it – once it's on your hair or once it's in your skin, it doesn't feel greasy. And there were times in my life where I tried olive oil and all other kinds of natural things, and it just didn't work. But coconut oil, it just goes right in and feels great. So I just like to stress how great it is outside of your body. But it's also good as an animal fat replacement, and it has a lovely flavor.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's as versatile as butter. So from savory to sweet dishes, you can make sweet potato fries, or like you mentioned, it's a great vegan option. It's also good for people who have allergies to peanut or other things. A true coconut allergy is very rare. So a lot of people are replacing it there, or any kind of need for a dairy substitute too. Sometimes the coconut oil can work.
So you're working with coconut oil, and I know that you're making some other products with the coconut oil, like a spray and little individual size oils
mm-hmm.
for traveling, which can be convenient. Are you considering other coconut products in addition to coconut oil?
Right now, we're just focused on coconut oil. That was the whole basis of starting the company, really, was I wanted to find the highest quality product, the transparent sourcing that we talked about, the fair trade sourcing, and we wanted to educate people about how they can use it. So we have our jars of coconut oil, which are pretty standard. We package in amber glass jars. We have the new packets, which I always carry with me wherever I'm going. The spray, which is new. So if you're doing pancakes, you have a convenient spray, because people who are switching to coconut oil every day, they still want that convenience factor. Just because they've decided to switch to a healthier alternative doesn't mean they want to go back to just having the jar. So the spray, we have pre-measured baking sticks. That's another convenience factor. Making chocolate chip cookies, these baking sticks are pre-measured, like your sticks of butter. You can measure out a half cup, put it in your bowl, keep moving. You don't even have to get your measuring cups out anymore.
I definitely have to try that.
Soft gel.
You know, you probably are aware that a lot of people are up in arms about palm oil and how unsustainable it is.
Mm-hmm.
And coconut is is very different, like you explained. At least my understanding
it,
is.
Yes,
is
it is. And there's some, and there, and I was just having this discussion earlier today about palm oil, because we were talking about red palm oil. And there are now sustainability for palm oils. And I know that our favorite Dr. Oz has really talked about red palm oil lately. But that's even touchier in terms of having a product sourced outside the U.S. that has sustainable practices first, and then after the sustainability, which is a huge issue right there, is it fair trade practices? Are those workers getting better wages? How are their working conditions? If it is fair trade certified, who's certifying it, and where is that money actually going? Is it going back to healthcare and education in those communities? So those are more questions that a conscious consumer could ask about red palm oil versus our fair trade certified coconut oil.
So this fair trade program that you're talking about, and specifically with your products, what does that guarantee the people that are making your product in Philippines and Sri Lanka?
So the Fair for Life certification is a third-party certifier that is not related to our source. So we can't pay them to say, give us, you know, this certification. We can't pay anybody off for it. Mm-hmm. They go in and they do yearly audits to make sure the there's no forced labor, there's no child labor, there's equal treatment, the health and safety is good, they have good wages. So they also evaluate environmental issues, water conservation, energy management. It's really great because the palm tree is the tree of life. So many different things that they're doing over there. They actually recycle the palm fronds as fertilizer for the palm trees. Auctions pull carts of coconuts so that they're not using oil or polluting by using any cars or motors. So they actually have this whole great sustainable cycle of reusing all the products. All the tusks and things that they don't use can be used for feed or go back towards housing. So it's really great what they're doing in these areas. And then some of the other things that the Fair for Life certification is just the social impact. What's going on in these areas, the impact it's having, and a lot of people are willing to join these projects because, for the most part, like in Sri Lanka, for example, that country has been through a lot with
a civil
war,
hell.
the 2004 tsunami that went through there. People are just looking for work that can help bring them out of these situations, and when these fair trade certified projects, they're willing to work and actually have a great source of income for their families and something that helps them up.
Now, I love the fair trade certification. I love the organic certification, but more people are becoming familiar with the organic certification and in some ways how difficult it is for smaller farmers, small scale farmers, to do all of the paperwork. They call it a lot of red tape, and it's expensive and difficult. And I don't know if that's true or not. I've heard things on both sides of the argument, but I've heard some people say that it's becoming similar with the fair trade certification. So sometimes when something becomes more popular and more government gets involved, then it gets a little heavier and not as cool as it used to be. So I don't know. Is it difficult to get a fair trade certification, and how do you feel about where it's going?
I would say it is difficult to get a fair trade certification. I'm put through audits. I have to do things and meet certain requirements to make sure that we keep that fair trade certification, which on one end is good because if we're being put through these tests, then we know it's legitimate. They actually care about giving out the certification. They're not going to give it to anybody for just a little bit of money. But that does make it more difficult because it's the more scrutiny that I'm put under and the more time and the more effort and things that for me as a smaller guy is put under, I'm that makes me question is, you know, are these, is this something I want to keep up with? If the bigger counterparts aren't doing it and I'm making sure that I'm going the extra mile to do it, is it really worth my time and my energy because I have to jump through so many more hoops to have it than my competitors that don't have it? So that's kind of where your, I guess, your moral compass lies of what you're willing to give up for business and what you're willing to stand by.
Right.
And the organics, kind of the same way. I've heard from different people. I have a friend in Argentina who he has olive oils, and I was asking him if he was going to get his certified organic. And he's like, you know, Erin, it's so hard. You have to go back 5 years from the date of which you want to get your organic certification, and you can't have used any of these certain, you know, pesticides or fertilizers or different things. And even if we've been relatively clean, if even one showed up anywhere along the line, you know, it's going to be really hard to get our certification. So for him, it doesn't make sense. So there, I think there's both sides of the story, and you could probably have an argument for both.
Yeah, as it goes with most arguments. But I like what you said, and I really wish that something like fair trade certification, maybe we can give it another name, but something that all businesses really need to comply with. That's a major problem that we have. We need some sort of certification where we know every business is treating their employees fairly, where they're getting a livable wage, benefits, and that they're not damaging the earth in any way. And, you know, that would put most companies in the United States couldn't be certified because they're doing so many terrible things, even if they're making a decent product. So I think fair trade is a good thing, but we need to expand on it and really bring it here.
Yeah, and that's part of being a consumer in the marketplace, because I have had a lot of people tell me, well, fair trade's great, but when it comes down to it, I'm just going to buy what's cheaper on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really disheartening, because it's if something's out of sight, out of mind, well, that doesn't matter. You know, I'm really watching my checkbook this week, and I can only spend $10 on this product, and so I'm going to make sure that I'm, you know, find the lower cost option. That's hard. I've had buyers, even some people at Whole Foods say, like, at the end of the day, a consumer doesn't care that much about fair trade. So we're doing what we can on educating people so that to bring it to the forefront, so that people, more people care and more people will have that part of their buying decision when going to the store.
You know, it's all about education, and education, of course, takes money. It's hard. Mm-hmm. You're starting a business, and there's so many things that you need to do, but fair trade is really important. Now, my understanding is fair trade started with coffee, and I don't know how many products it's expanded to. I've seen fair trade chocolate. Do you know how many products are now considered fair trade?
Fair trade chocolate is huge. The whole bean to bar movement with chocolate is really big. There's fair trade tea, coffee, chocolates, coconut. I'm trying to think what other ones. Really, anything that you're sourcing outside of the U.S., I'm sure there's somebody there that can certify it for you.
Now, if anybody's confused,
or anything like that, too,
we're talking about fair trade, and we're not talking about free trade, because free trade is a whole nother bag of worms. They're not the same, and free trade really is nothing about free or freedom or anything. It's pretty ugly, and all the agreements we've gone into with other countries to get free trade, I think, have done a lot more harm than good in terms of shutting down a lot of mom and pop businesses and small farmers in support of the larger corporations. So fair trade, remember, is good, and free trade is nothing like it.
Yeah, fair trade is all about the workers and their conditions and things like that, and making sure they have good, sustainable, great working conditions.
Okay, Aaron, we just have a couple minutes left. So you're going to be at the Fancy Food Show in Manhattan next week or in a couple of weeks?
I was looking at the calendar. It's a week and a half. The 29th through the 2nd at the Javits Center. It's the first year it's coming back to the Javits since it was under construction. It was in D.C. before, so we're really excited to get into the city. This will be our first show in New York.
Well, I'm going to be there. I was just at the Book Expo at the Javits, and now I'm coming to the Fancy Food Show, and I'm really looking forward to it and meeting you and maybe sampling some of your coconut oil. And who knows?
Well,
I might
sure
need a little on my skin.
Don't
or
eat
maybe a little
you
quick.
Come.
It might be hot and frizzy, humid, so I could just put a little on my hair at the last minute and keep looking slick and smooth. anything else you want to share with us about Kalapo and coconut oil before we go?
Sure. If you want to find out more about our specific fair trade, you can go to our website, kelapo.com, K-E-L-A-P-O.com. Or for recipes, we have a great blog, wearecoconuts.com, and we have more nutritional and ideas for using coconut oil in your kitchen.
Okay, well, I see I was pronouncing it wrong. It's Kalapo.
That's fine. Yeah, chefs who know use Kalapo.
Oh, there we go. I like that. Okay, Aaron, thank you for joining me on It's All About Food, and all the best with your product. And I'm sure you're helping a lot of people in Sri Lanka and the Philippines, so thank you for that.
Great. Thanks, Karen. See you in New York.
Thank you. So we're going to take a quick break and be back in a moment and start breathing deeply, because we're going to be talking about stress, but there are great solutions for it. So stick with us. Hello, everybody. We're back. And I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Are you comfortable and relaxed? Or are you stressed out? Well, we have some solutions for you to relieve some of that stress, because we all have it. And maybe I shouldn't even say relieve some of that stress. I think what we're going to learn about in the next half hour is how to master that stress and how to make it fit into your lovely lifestyle and make your lifestyle or life restyle. Yeah. You'll understand that in a minute, how to make it more enjoyable and more beneficial for you and everyone around you. Okay, so I'm going to bring on my guest, organic foods pioneer Paul Kulich, developed severe stress-related condition, and was diagnosed as incurable after he was CEO of a highly successful publicly listed food company. Determined to heal himself, Kulich traveled to the world-renowned Mayo Clinic. After exhausted research, he succeeded in mastering stress and curing himself by implementing his 9-step overall wellness plan. And we're going to hear about that right now. He's got a book out called Stress Pandemic, The Lifestyle Solution, 9 Natural Steps to Survive, Master Stress, and Live Well. Welcome to It's All About Food, Paul.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Yeah, well, I was very excited and happy to meet you at the Book Expo recently, which was a really wonderful event.
Yes, it was.
I don't usually enjoy being enclosed in one of those conference-type exhibit environments with so many human beings, but it actually was a really good one. Maybe. Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right. So, people love gloom and doom stories with a happy ending.
Yeah.
And you have one.
Yes, well, I'm very lucky that even though I was a victim of stress, I've now mastered it. My story is a happy ending.
I don't want to say that it's lucky. You worked really hard to figure out what you needed to do. There was no luck involved there.
Well, thank you. That is so true. Thank you.
Well, you know, I don't have the same story, but I was diagnosed with advanced ovarian cancer in 2006, 10 to 20% survival rate. And people tell me I'm lucky to be here. And it's not luck. I worked hard I did similar to what you did. I figured out what I needed to do to solve my problem and get over it.
Yeah.
Okay, so we want to hear more about you and the stress pandemic. So tell us a little bit about you first. and where stress came into play?
Well, as a teenager, I bought into the Hollywood dream. That is, work hard and be your own boss.
And this was in New Zealand, the
yes,
Hollywood dream.
Yeah, it was. But I used to watch the movies and American television shows, so I bought into it. The people who seemed very happy and more successful, they lived in a safe neighbourhood and they could travel the world, and I thought, gee, I want all that too. So sure enough, I worked very hard, and it was around about the age of 40 that I thought I had the perfect life.
Mm.
As you said, Karen, I was the chairman, CEO of a multi-million dollar pioneering organic food company. It was listed on the stock exchange, and I had just built, for the people I love most, the grand mansion. And, of course, I had the Ferrari and Porsche parked out in the driveway.
Wow.
But due to stress and making poor lifestyle choices, I lost everything. Most of all, my freedom. I was made a ward of the state.
Wow.
My bank accounts were frozen. My credit cards were taken off me. All contracts were made null and void. All due to stress. And where did it all start? It started with some symptoms of stress. My symptoms were grinding of the teeth.
Mm, so many people do that today.
That's right. Yeah. Well, it's a big warning. And another one was having insomnia.
And so many people can't sleep today. Okay.
And then I had a bit of a dull feeling in my tummy. But because I was conscious of health anyway, I did reach out for help. So, of course, I went to the doctor, psychiatrist, the dentist, and I wore the mouth guard. But it's not too attractive wearing that at night, that's for sure. But I did everything. But I kept getting worse. I developed anxiety. I developed depression. I went on medication, and I had one of the top psychiatrists in the country. She was rated in the top three. So I had all the best help around me, but I kept getting worse. And no matter what I was told to do, and I took up meditation and yoga, and I thought I had a good lifestyle. I thought I was eating good food. And we'll come on to that a bit later, but what happened was I was out of control. In the end, I had severe depression, lying in the fetal position in bed, feeling afraid, unloved, in total darkness. And from there, I became a runaway train, developing mood swings. And then I had a debilitating mental breakdown, a terrifying one. And that's when I lost my rights. Now,
wow.
You don't want to go there.
No. But so many people have some of those symptoms, and they may not ultimately reach what you achieved, or I don't know how to put it, but they may not have that climax of depression and totally breaking down. But there's so much that we can do to prevent that. Now, you said you, at 40, you thought you had the ideal life, but were you happy? Or did you think you were happy? What was going on in your head?
Well, what was going on? I was questioning my happiness. I was actually questioning it. I'd actually speak to a lot of people a lot more successful than me who've got the Picassos in their office and everything else. And I used to ask everybody, are you happy? And they'd say, oh, yes, of course, I'm taking over this company and I'm doing this and that. But the more I looked at it, they were in denial too.
Mm-hmm.
I started to realise, what is their lifestyle about? And I started to look at mine. And I started to say, Mum, I've forgotten what it's like to feel contentment. I think I lost it when I was a kid because why aren't I happy? And why is my happiness fleeting? You know, you get the new buzz on something, but it evaporates later.
Yeah, it's almost like an addict. You get a new toy, it's
yes,
good for the moment, but then you need a bigger rush.
That's right. It's like all of us out there, we want the bigger home, we want the bigger promotion, we want the bigger holiday. But where are you? Are you really happy? Are your goals and ambitions merging with contentment? The chances are they're not. My contentment was down on the ground. My goals and ambitions were reaching for the sky. And I paid a huge price. You don't have to believe in what I'm saying. Just think of Elvis. He had everything.
Mm.
He had the world at his feet. He had fame, fortune, power, and same with Karen Carpenter. What were her destructive coping mechanisms? She had a short life too, being anorexic.
Right.
If you look at Michael Jackson and recently Whitney Houston, all wonderful people, but all of their lives shortened. Why? Due to stress.
Yeah. You know, I read your book and there, you had mentioned just sitting at night, having dinner, finishing a bottle of wine or something. And I know so many people that do that every day. Well, in France, for example, it's part of the culture. But a lot of times it's the only way they can unwind, and they don't realize that they're alcoholics or close to it. And the alcohol isn't healthy for them. And in some places, they drink the alcohol, a fine wine. It's expensive. It feels good. It helps you relax. But then to wake up, they need coffee, espresso. So it's up and down and up and down, and nobody acknowledges that these are really drugs. All right, so let's get to the good part. There is a way to manage stress. We can't get rid of it, but we can manage and master it.
That is so true. There's always going to be sources of stress, but you can take the first step. You can take charge. You can have an awareness that the world is a bit of a bullying place and that a lot of us have difficulty in being able to say no. But the Stress Pandemic Lifestyle Solution helps guide you to take charge, to empower you and fortify you against stress, and to be able to kick bad habits, as you mentioned earlier. Those four famous people, they had destructive coping mechanisms. And if you think of the Mental Health America survey, 37% of us Americans reach for food to cope with stress.
Mm-hmm.
And 27% of us reach for alcohol, drugs, and smoking. And the remainder of us are taking up anything from gambling, sex, or even addiction to the internet. So you're not alone. And as for me, yep, I was into crack, caffeine, refined sugar, right, alcohol, and processed foods. And I thought I was just a social drinker. I thought, I haven't got a drinking problem. I only have one or two glasses a day. Well, I wasn't really being honest. After I'd fallen over and started to analyze and research everything, I realized I was infringing. I wasn't honest. I was drinking more than a couple glasses a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was into crap. Junk food was comfort food. Even though I was eating good meals in between and at night, I was grazing and eating a lot of rubbish.
I do believe that we all have the power within us to make change and make positive change. The mind is really, really powerful. But more and more, it's becoming more difficult. And we're being more manipulated, and corporations are using more sophisticated marketing tools. They're using psychiatry. They're trying to figure us out at all different ages, from children, from birth, really. They want to get us from birth as consumers to aging seniors, and they use really sophisticated techniques, and people really want to believe they have free choice. They really want to believe that they're in charge, and to some degree, we're not. We're highly manipulated. We all want that dream. We want that 30,000 square foot home.
Well, it's so true. And with our destructive coping mechanisms, a lot of research that the people you're talking about realize we get a dopamine hijack. We get an artificial stimulation. Dopamine is one of the important neurochemicals that makes up the people you are. That's your thoughts, feelings, emotions, and moods. It's your reward pleasure center. So when you reach for that candy bar or alcohol or smoking or gambling or sex, whatever it may be, it's actually giving you an artificial release, which makes you more dependent on needing more as time goes on. And that's what happened to me. I needed more junk food, I needed more crap, I needed more alcohol.
Now let's step back a little bit. Do you think you learned any of this from growing up, from your parents or from your culture? somehow?
Yes, we do. We actually adopt a lifestyle from the moment we're actually conceived in our mum's womb. Very shortly after, five neurochemicals are coming to play in our lives. That's serotonin, epinephrine, norepinephrine, dopamine, and endorphins. By the time you actually come into this world, the cortisol, the stress hormone cortisol, is playing a huge part. So if mum was having issues while she was pregnant, or she's been abused, or got financial worries, or having a poor diet, it is affecting your behaviour right then as a newborn when you come into this world. And we buy into our lifestyles of our parents. If they're into junk, we are too. Mm-hmm. If we're into a healthy lifestyle, the chances are we will also. But as we grow up, we get bullied. We get manipulated, as you said, Karen, mm-hmm. with sophisticated advertising. How can we hook these children onto these products? How can they be a lifetime customer?
Yeah, it's terrible. Excuse me. I don't know. Did you see the movie Silver Lining Playbook?
No.
No, but you should.
Wow.
It's about a young man, and he's bipolar.
Yes.
And he had what seemed to be a nice life. He was married. He was a teacher. And the story opens where he's just coming out of being in some sort of mental hospital because he had a serious, violent, almost violent breakdown. And the story is continues how he meets a young woman who's also bipolar and how they help each other. And he has to go to therapy, and his doctor was always saying to him, "You need to find a strategy. You need to find a strategy." And that's it. Whether it's a mental issue or anything in life, if you want to make a change, you need to have a plan, a strategy, and you offer your 9 natural steps. So let's talk a little bit more about the 9 natural steps. Now, one of the things that I like about it is you put it all in a circle rather than in a list. It's all in a circle. And what's nice about that, I think, is we're continually saying this more and more, but you have to connect the dots. Everything's connected. I'm looking for the circle here. I'm not quite sure where it is, but
I'll
know it's in here.
Yeah, it's right here. There it is on page 33.
That's a good number. So, it's a circle. And the thing is, all of these things are connected, and you suggest starting with some of these steps, and if you can't jump in and do it all at once. But each one of these is so important, and my focus is always on food, of course, and food and stress are related.
They are.
So if you could be eating healthfully, and eating healthfully will help you to some degree manage your stress. And if you have a lot of stress and you're not managing it well, it's going to encourage you to not eat healthfully. And those things are continually like feedback loop to each other, which is why it's good that you put all of these things in a circle, because they all interact with each other.
They are. And actually, think of us having a bit of a weight issue around our tummies, like I had a big one. My boys used to say, "I got a football." Mm, this is before.
I can't imagine.
Yeah,
you're so slim and trim.
But when stress was controlling me, 16 years ago, I had a pot belly and cellulite, and I wasn't the best in health. And my issue is that, yes, they're all interrelated, and they all help you to take back control. But there's a relationship between having weight issues and having a destructive coping mechanism and having a mind condition. They're all interlinked.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding that and having awareness of your lifestyle, that's how you can break the cycle of stress.
We do have to understand it because those things are all interconnected. That's what makes it so much harder.
Yes, but you can take small practical steps. Like as you mentioned earlier, nutrition is very, very powerful. It affects your neurochemistry.
Mm-hmm.
But you could also take up exercise and understand that when you wake up in the morning, if you were to have some fresh room temperature water and drink as much as you can, up to about a litre, and then seize the urban gym. Here I am on the Granite Rock here in New York City, and I've been here for 3.5 years. I'm always out in the urban gym. no matter what the weather's like. You're giving your 7,200 nerve endings a huge workout. They are connected to every part of the brain and the body. So you taking a big, brisk, aerobic walk, which I call central pattern generator, no interruptions, waving your arms up to eye level, briskly walking non-stop, it will empower you, it'll de-stress you. You'll have more energy to be able to take on the challenges of the day. And when you come back, again, nutrition, you juice some vegetables like spinach and celery and carrot, all these vegetables, you'll get the maximum beneficial for your neurochemistry, for the brain and the body. And that's how you fortify yourself. So if you start giving crap a bit of a kick in the behind and start embracing good mood foods, you're going to feel a lot better.
You know, the fascinating thing about all of this is it's not expensive and it's accessible to everyone.
That's right. I used to have a trainer.
You don't need a big membership or a trainer. You just need to get outside. And there are some recent studies you may have seen that have been showing that exercising outdoors is more effective than exercising indoors.
Well, it's so true. And that's why I'm in a one-bedroom apartment. I've got noise and sirens going. I put myself in that position when I was writing Stress Pandemic. I do my exercise by just moving the lounge little coffee table. I pull out a towel and do it right there. I don't waste any time. These steps are for you mum and dads who are working two jobs, trying to keep it together, and you're on the go. You can find the time. You'd be surprised.
I believe you. Now, it's particularly a problem with parents of young children. I think that's the most challenging, because not only are you trying to manage your own life, but you're managing these small lives that are so impressionable and requiring so much. So that's probably where the biggest challenge with people with time constraints come from. But you know, you could even exercise with your children right there.
Well, you can, and you're not wasting a lot of traveling time. You're maximizing the whole benefit. Let's face it, it all starts with you saying no to stress. And this is all about you. And if you care about your loved ones, where will you be, or where will they be if you got sick? You can't afford to. So this is all about you taking back control. And when Karen talked about nutrition, well, a lot of us out there might not be aware, and I wasn't aware till I researched everything about stress, that we've got a second brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's right down in your gut and your small intestine. That's where 95% of your serotonin is, your good mood foods, your good mood feelings, which I mentioned earlier about those five neurochemicals. That's where it is. So it all starts with food.
It is all about food, at least in my world. Now, you mentioned your loved ones, and I want to ask you about some of your loved ones. I know that through this whole process did lead to a divorce between you and your wife. But what happened with your brothers and your children after you were born again? How did they respond to this, and have they learned from what you've learned?
Well, I'm very proud of my three sons. They've all embraced the lifestyle a lot, and they've learnt a lot. Of course, it was very painful for them, and it was painful for my former wife. We'd been married for nearly 24 years, and it was very, very tough on everyone. But I'm very good friends with her, and we're very blessed to have three wonderful boys. And I'm a grandfather. I've got three grandchildren. As for my brothers, well, I love them enormously. But what caused me to have a nervous breakdown? The stresses of life. But it wasn't so much being the workaholic. The lifestyle came due to the stresses of family. And those stresses came from my sister-in-law and my older brother and issues like that. And that was my Achilles heel. That's what really took me down. So it was pretty tough.
Yeah, well, we can really allow other people to take away our energy, take away what's important to us, but we allow them to do that. And you just have to say no.
That's right. But as I said earlier, I didn't know how to say no. I was a martyr. I was always pleasing everyone else. And the more I did, I suffered because I wasn't following my innermost feeling. I didn't know how to say no. But in developing the 9 steps, it's not all about willpower. It's about you having an awareness and understanding of stress and the stress pandemic and how you're caught up in it and how you can be guided to breaking that cycle by just adopting 1 or 2 practical steps, because they actually empower you to take up the other steps. They help you to take charge, learn to say no, and kick your bad habits.
Now, some people would say saying no, thinking about yourself, is rather selfish. And some of us are often taught that being selfish isn't very nice.
Well, I agree with that, and I was always a little boy, always sharing my lollies till I had none left even for myself. But I paid a big price.
You have to be selfish.
Well,
you have to love yourself.
Yes. I don't really call it us being selfish. It's about us setting parameters, knowing that we all deal with stress in different ways. Your sister or your brother or your husband or wife, they could all react to stress differently. You might find something stressful when they don't. It's about you sticking up for yourself. Hey, Charlie, this stresses me out. Doesn't stress you out, but what about my feelings? This is hurting me. And if you respect me and love me, don't you want to see me happy? Don't you want to see me well? And that's what it's about.
Okay, let's get to the food part, because that's where it's all about. Food. And I think we're in line for the most part on food with what you recommend. It's so important to drink a lot of water. And I'm a big proponent of juicing. I know it saved my life. I can't say enough about juicing. Although there are some mixed feelings about juicing out there. And, you know, I just go, oh, God.
Well, hey, you know what? There's always door knockers. There's always tire knockers. But the thing is, there's no way I would have overcame my huge conditions of health. Even if you go and Google, there's no cure. And I was encouraged by the doctors to write this book because they were amazed, and my family were. So I juiced, and my mother juices. And I tell you what, before she juiced, she was overweight. She was always sick and everything. And I had to tell her, Mum, maybe you don't love yourself, but I love you. If anything happens to you, that's going to affect me.
Mm.
So please, Mum, fight back. Well, she looks better than all her other friends. She's 83 and she's doing so well. She juices every day and she looks amazing. She looks nothing like her age.
Well, the thing about juicing is it's the fastest way to get a great amount of nutrition to your brain, which for so many people is starving. And it's the easiest way to start on the path to get off of all those other things. So yay to juicing. Then the other thing is, of course, it's the plants. It's the plant world that makes all the difference. It makes it so much easier to attain your natural weight, and it feeds our brain and the rest of ourselves and our bodies. You do mention the importance of limiting dairy, because dairy is the top of my super bad list of foods.
Well, it's very, very bad. A lot of listeners out there might not be aware, but all the antibiotics, toxins, everything is stored in the animal fat.
That's right.
All right? And what is happening is you're re-eating it again and again, and it's addictive because your body will always crave sugars and fats, and you need to have an awareness that you're getting a dopamine hijack. I was into the cookies. I was into the desserts, and dessert spelled backwards is stressed.
Oh, I got to remember that. That is so good. Dessert spelled backwards is stress. Okay, so I'm going to remember crap and dessert. Yeah. And remember what those things stand for.
I'm glad you brought that up. I am a vegan, and I don't encourage eating animals for so many reasons. I personally came to it because I didn't believe in killing, and I think there's so much beauty and intelligence in other species. But they have those chemicals in them, too, like we have. And when we put animals through stress, especially in factory farms where they're in stress their entire lives, and then at slaughter where it's just a nightmare, and then you eat it, that cannot help your own stress levels.
No, and it's leading to cancer. It's leading to diabetes. It's leading to heart attacks and strokes and serious mind conditions like severe anxiety, severe depression, bipolar disorder, all comes from stress. And the animals that we're eating, look, I was into crap and I used to eat hot dogs and bacon and everything. And I tried to make them healthy. But no matter how much I tried to make them healthy as a manufacturer, I knew they were no good for us. They still had the nitrites, they still had the additives, and they're still animals. So you who are eating animals, have an awareness. Don't eat the fat. Try and cut down. Try and say no.
Try and say no. I like that. But let's say yes to taking charge of our lives. And even if someone says something is incurable or you can't fix it, don't believe them. Maybe you do have something that's incurable, but you can do so much to make your life so much better. And who knows? Maybe you can find a cure.
That's right. You should never give up. Think of that child learning to walk. No matter how many times he or she falls over, they pick themselves up again and again.
I mean, what else do you have to do with your time anyway, right? You may benefit from it. You probably will. Well, Paul, thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food. Tell me, you have a bunch of websites. Where should we be going?
Well, you can go to stresspandemic.com and a whole world of information will come to you. Or you can go to Paul Hulich, spelled H-U-L-J-O-C-H, .com. The book is available in Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com and, of course, all leading bookstores throughout our great nation.
Okay, well, thank you, Paul. Let's all take a big, deep breath now. Let out that stress. Okay, thank you so much. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food, and join me at my nonprofit website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. And remember, have a delicious week.